Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash.
All right, everybody. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash and live on the Take It Easy YouTube channel. Shout out to everyone joining in on both of those magical places. I hope y'all are having an amazing, fantabulous day so far. We've got one amazing, fantabulous show here for you this week, and we've got a lot to dip into, whether it be the end of the Brooklyn Nets run or whether it be our buddy Trae Young, the ice-cold killer, winning Game 7 for the Atlanta Hawks, winning Game 1 last night against the Milwaukee Bucks in a series that, had they not won that game, it would have been toast, finito, game over for the Milwaukee Bucks, or I'm sorry, for the Atlanta Hawks. If the 48-point Trae Young game with 34 shots and that high of a usage rate ends up in a loss for the Atlanta Hawks, the Bucks are just the better team. So the Hawks get a much-needed Game 1 to keep this series interesting, and winning 4 out of 6 seems a lot more difficult for Milwaukee than winning 3 out of 6. Not to totally overreact, because I know these end up being long series, but in the way that we're looking at it right now, I'm starting to think that this series could end up being quite the long one for the Atlanta Hawks and Milwaukee Bucks, and it probably would have been a sweep had it not ended last night. So shout out to the Atlanta Hawks for that magical victory. We'll get to that. Actually, we'll start with that here and then see where we go from there, because Rick Carlisle is going to the Pacers. You may have remembered last week on the show, we were live on the air when that news of the Dallas Mavericks broke. He took a subtle shot at Jason Kidd that I want to go through at some point here. We'll see what timing looks like here on today's radio show. But I'm guessing, just based on the theme of today's show, it's going to be very NBA-centric, because that seems to be the massive storylines going on in the league right now. We'll talk about both conference final series being the big thing today. We'll start out east. We'll work our way down to the west. I've also got some thoughts on Kawhi Leonard as well, so maybe we'll get to those as well at some point here on the podcast. But let's start out in the Eastern Conference, and let's start out by talking about ice cold killer Trae Young, because it was a phenomenal game to watch last night between the Atlanta Hawks and the Milwaukee Bucks. There's been 5 straight phenomenal basketball games. I saw this stat courtesy of StatMuse that the last 5 NBA games, which is Game 7 between the Bucks and the Nets, Game 7 between the 76ers and Hawks, so obviously big-time games, Game 1 Western Conference Finals, Game 2 Western Conference Finals, and Game 1 Eastern Conference Finals were all within 2 points in the last 2 minutes of the game. All 5 games, the last 5 NBA games we've had, all within 2 points in the last 2 minutes of the game. So every single one has come right down to the wire. And if I were to rank that, I was at the U.S. Open on Sunday, so I didn't get to see the Phoenix and Clippers Game 1, which seems like it was the worst of the 5, given how intense all these games have been. So of the ones, I would say that's number five. Number four was game two, game seven between Philadelphia and Atlanta. Three would be the Valley-oop, which we'll get to later, game two of the Western Conference Finals. Then yesterday's Hawks-Bucks game, and number one, of course, being Brooklyn and Milwaukee. Did I really need to do that? Not exactly, but we got an hour of show today, so let's take our sweet time and rank games, considering there's not a lot of baseball going on either. And the Atlanta Hawks, I, the mayor of Warriors South, who has been preaching for years about the Atlanta Hawks being the next step in the right direction, and I don't want to do the show today where we talk about, you know, is Steph Curry the next Trae Young? Is Trae Young the next Steph Curry? Is Steph Curry the model by which Trae Young is going to ascend to? And I don't exactly want to do the show where we talk about Trae Young and talk about Curry and how great Trae Young is or is going to be or what it might be, because to be honest, I think that for years, Trae Young, first of all, Trae Young's not any more or less of a player than he was 3 days ago, but also Trae Young is the first child of the Steph Curry generation. We've talked about it much before. One in 774 chance that the Philadelphia 76ers lose that series to the Hawks, so only in like a crazy reality where the Sixers implode and blow multiple gigantic historic leads do the Atlanta Hawks even get to this point, which part of that we can give the benefit of that to the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks have done a lot to get to that point. They just showed how capable they were by, again, beating the Milwaukee Bucks in game one of that series. But at the same time, we kind of view it through the prism of the Sixers imploding and the Sixers being a better team than the Atlanta Hawks. I think even after watching that series, nobody's really going to dispute that the Philadelphia 76ers on paper were a better team than the Atlanta Hawks, because even with a Joel Embiid injury, the Hawks still got outplayed by the Philadelphia 76ers in realistically six of the seven games that we saw in the series. They were up 18 in game four. They were up 26 in game five before collapsing. And in game seven, they were up 12 early on in the game, and we kind of just felt like everything was going to fall apart for the Sixers, at which it ended up happening. And so what we see from the Atlanta Hawks is an opportunity that we didn't think they would get, and yet here they are winning a magical game one. And I think part of it is that we all kind of expect, even still, the Bucks will come back and win the series. Even I, the mayor of Warriors South, recognizes, and I talked about this on today's Take It Easy podcast for a brief moment, the Hawks have one of those guys that can do what Trae Young does. The Bucks have three of those guys who on a good night can do not exactly what Trae Young does, but can do more than what Bogdanovich can do more than what Gallinari can do more than what John Collins can do. That's Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and, of course, Giannis, who combined for 81 points between the three of them yesterday. And for Atlanta, Trae Young, in a historically great game, scored or assisted on 80 of those Atlanta Hawks points. And I thought that was just a fun stat, that 80 of the Hawks points were scored or assisted on by Trae Young, and 81 points were specifically scored by the Milwaukee Bucks, being Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday. And they don't do a lot of assisting or distribution, so a lot of their points did come from the ISO game. And I feel like it's like Trae Young trying to run an offense as well as three ISO players who are all-stars on the Milwaukee Bucks, like Trae Young trying to top three all-stars with his single play and capable players around him. That's the biggest difference between the Hawks of yesteryear, who didn't even make it to the NBA bubble under Lloyd Pierce, and the Atlanta Hawks now in 2021, is that there are capable players who Trae Young puts in positions to succeed. Bogdanovich, Gallinari, what was DeAndre Hunter, Lemon Pepper Lou, the improvements of Kevin Huerter in the playoffs, Clint Capella. There's all sorts of different pieces added to that Atlanta Hawks roster that will take advantage when Trae Young puts them in a position to succeed. And that's something that didn't exist when Trae Young was the first – well, John Collins was the first. But Trae Young was really the cornerstone pick for the franchise. And that doesn't even account for Cam Reddish, who hasn't played at all in the postseason for the Hawks. They have capable pieces, unlike what they had back in Trae Young's first and second years in the NBA, 2018, 19, and 19, 20, up through the pandemic. And so Atlanta adds all these capable pieces to their team, and everything changes almost overnight for the Atlanta Hawks, because the switch from Lloyd Pierce to Nate McMillan, which also came along with Bogdanovich returning to the lineup for the first time, felt like everything changed for the Atlanta Hawks. But it really was a longer process for Warriors South to get to that point. And, you know, I was elated to watch that Game 7 and see that it was Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, John Collins, the original big three of Warriors South, which we talked about back in 2019 when we were first beginning the Take It Easy podcast, and in 2020 once the pandemic first began, when we did our full episode on the rise of Warriors South and the greatness of the Atlanta Hawks. And that felt good, but it's all these capable pieces that Trae Young can put in a position to succeed that helps the Atlanta Hawks just prove like Trae Young is just a better player than anyone on the Knicks, and they're going to run through that series and then take advantage of when they get the opportunity and see the Sixers totally flop on offense, that they themselves are not going to flop on offense and that they're going to help come back. And you know what? Maybe now and then you'll get a 27-point Kevin Huerter game, even when Trae Young shoots 2-for-18 from the field like he did at the beginning of Game 7. You're going to get a Kevin Huerter game. You're going to get John Collins going up and catching lobs. Clint Capella and John Collins might be two of the most elite lob catchers in the NBA. Capella because he's tall, and John Collins because he's got himself some hops, maybe the best hops of the NBA. And John Collins had, I think, 24 points in Game 1 for the Atlanta Hawks, and it was remarkable. Like, John Collins played fantastic basketball. And I found most remarkable the way that we watched John Collins when he was not – I mean, I don't know how many people were paying close attention to the Hawks, but I was big Warriors South guy. I was big on the Trae Young hype and the fact that John Collins can be a nice complimentary piece. But the conversation we've been hearing for about 8 months around John Collins is that the Hawks aren't necessarily in love with his game. And I look at it in, like, John Collins can be a piece you supplement to get another, like, shot creator and star player. But ultimately – Trae Young puts him in a position to succeed the same way all of these guys, when Trae Young puts them in a position to succeed, are good enough to take advantage of that. That John Collins can slide on back screens and dunk basketballs, or he has a funky-ass shot and can shoot three-pointers at least a 33% clip. Like, little things like that that help the Atlanta Hawks be put in positions to succeed and at the very least keep pace, keep pace, keep pace, because that feels like the story of the Atlanta Hawks all season, which is just, we're going to keep pace, keep pace, keep pace. We're going to be the sixth seed. We're going to hang around the sixth seed, then we're going to jump to the five seed. We're going to keep pace, keep pace. We're never going to get blown out. We're not going to blow out a ton of teams. We're just going to keep pace, keep pace. We're going to be the five seed. We're going to go to New York. We're going to beat up on the Knicks because they're going to implode and we're going to be stable, and Trae Young is going to be the first player in NBA history to have 25 points and 10 assists in each of his first four playoff games. We're just going to keep pace, because Trae Young puts us in a position to succeed. We're never going to get down big. We're just going to chip back, chip away, chip away, chip away. We're going to get to the second round, and we're going to win a magical game one in Philadelphia because Trae Young can just keep pace and go nuclear at times. And yes, we might go down 2-1. And we might be in the position to go down 3-1 to the Philadelphia 76ers, but the 76ers are going to fall apart. And when the 76ers fall apart, we're going to take advantage of it just by a Bogdanovich 3 here, a Gallinari 3 over here. John Collins catches a lob. Clint Capella catches a lob. Boom, 10-0 run. We need a timeout. Trae Young's going to hit step-back three-pointers, and they're going to have to guard that. So we're going to spread out the floor. We're going to put Collins in one corner. We're going to put Gallinari in another corner. And we're just going to keep pace, keep pace, keep pace, keep pace. And that's kind of the idea of what the Atlanta Hawks have been going through for at least the last month or so, because that's what we've been paying attention to. And in the standings, I mean, they went from, like, how can we get better as a team and only having one top 50 player to, we might only have one top 50 player, but we've got about four or five guys who can be top 50 players, maybe not every night, But one night it's Bogdanovich. One night it's Capella. One night it's John Collins. One night it's Kevin Herter. And to be honest, John Collins is probably the second best player on that team. But the Hawks have a remarkable strength in numbers, which I purposely say to connote the Warriors, because, of course, the Atlanta Hawks are Warrior South. And for those who maybe don't know the connotation behind Warrior South, in 2017, when the Hawks, you know, fired their GM and fired Budenholzer and kind of started retooling, they hired Travis Schlentak from the Golden State Warriors, and you couldn't help but draw the comparisons between drafting John Collins, drafting Trae Young, drafting Kevin Herter to replicate baby Klay Thompson, baby Steph Curry, baby Draymond Green. Even though John Collins and Draymond Green have different styles of play, the idea that they have similar sizes and playing the same position was something that people kind of pointed to and said, oh, the Hawks are trying to recreate the Warriors' magic. And they're doing it with the first child of the Steph Curry generation. And to this point, the greatest child of the Steph Curry generation. It's Trae Young. It's Marcus Howard in college was averaging about 29 a game. There's going to be an influx of the Steph Curry generations of people who model their game after him. And Trae Young is very easily the one for the baby generation. For the babies coming up right now, Trae Young's only 22. He's years away from his prime, but also, you know, this might be some of his best basketball with the best teams that he's going to have across the next few years. I know it feels like the Hawks window is kind of opening, but Atlanta has some difficult decisions to make in the near future that'll be more complex. But to that point, it's that weird Kawhi Leonard situation where Kawhi gets them to the finals, and at 23 years old, by 27, he's got some knee issues, and this plays into something I wanted to talk about later on the show. But the Hawks have the baby generation led by Luka Doncic and Trae Young and Zion Williamson, them being the next great thing in the NBA. All of them right now are playing at remarkable levels, and we see it in highlight tapes and stories. But to see a deep playoff run from the Hawks, even if it's a 1 in 774 chance that the Philadelphia 76ers blew an 18 and a 26-point lead in games 4 and 5, even if it's that small sliver of a chance, it's just the introduction to the baby generation that we were kind of anticipating might happen, and that transition of power that we had said at the beginning. There's nothing guaranteed. Post LeBron and Steph Curry, nothing guaranteed, and we're seeing it right now because the only old head that's left is Kawhi Leonard, and we don't know if we're going to see him the rest of the playoffs. So it's all the people entering their primes right now, Devin Booker, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Paul George is in the middle of his prime right now, and it's the players of the baby generation like Trae Young, and like Luka Doncic almost was at the beginning, minus a neck, shoulder, and back injury that would have kept the Mavericks out of the Western Conference Finals. We're seeing these generational shifts, and the fact that we get to watch Trae Young at 22 years old, who is a superstar, like no question, Luka, Zion, Trae Young, those are the superstars of the baby generation. They are amazing right now to put these guys in positions to succeed. And for the Hawks to finally have players that can succeed at that level, the same way with the Phoenix Suns right now, same exact way where you can have the Valiup to Ayton that didn't exist when Devin Booker was having 70-point playoff games, or sorry, 70-point games where they lose by 15 points. Like, it just didn't exist in the past. But now you've got the talent to supplement that ability to put people in a position to succeed that gives Trae Young this power to amaze and to win basketball games that ultimately buy him more time in the limelight for people to come around on the fact that, hey, this Trae Young kid, he's absolutely fantastic. I've been saying it since 2019. I've been saying it since he was drafted. Like, this kid is the first child of the Steph Curry generation. He's a future all-star. And we're seeing it right now with Trae Young, because he gets to spend more time in the limelight, part because the Sixers fell apart, because the Atlanta Hawks have put Trae Young in a position to succeed, whether it's baby Klay Thompson or John Collins or I'm sorry, Bogdanovich and Gallinari and Clint Capella and Lemon Pepper Lou and all of those dudes. Even Solomon Hill. Solomon Hill was playing key minutes for the Atlanta Hawks the other night. Like, they've just got like 10 deep on the roster, all of them capable players. None of them going to wow you out of the building, but every now and then you get a 27-pointer from Kevin Huerter. You get a 27-pointer from Bogdanovich. You get 6 3-pointers from Gallinari. It's not going to be the same guy every night, but the Atlanta Hawks have so many dudes down the depth chart that all of a sudden Trae Young puts guys in a position to succeed, and of course they're going to progress to the mean at some point. Like, of course Gallinari, who might go 0 for 5 one night, is going to hit 5 3-pointers the next night. And of course Bogdanovich, who is not quite a shot creator but can kind of create his own shot. Of course Gallinari and Bogdanovich are going to score some buckets. And Clint Capella is going to have a double-double after only having 6 points in one game and grab offensive rebounds. And Trae Young might go nuclear for 48 points and score an assist on 80 of those points. It's a beneficiary of his skill set and now being put in positions to succeed, because this happens in, we're seeing it right now in the Western Conference Finals, where it's basically a battle between 2 7 seeds, a super interesting battle because the teams are evenly matched, but it's a battle between 2 7 seeds with Chris Paul's Phoenix Suns, even though Chris Paul's supposed to play tonight, and the Kawhi-less Clippers. Is just, you're going to get higher usage rates from Devin Booker and Paul George, and your team's going to be slightly worse. Increase the usage rate, team's going to be slightly worse. And so the Hawks were about to be in that position for, they've been in that position for 3 years, to be honest, which is Trae Young, super high usage rate, Hawks suck. Why? Because they don't have any other pieces that Trae Young can put in positions to succeed, because no matter how good Trae Young can be, it's just not the role that fits for, you know, whoever you want to throw in there as the former Atlanta Hawks from 2019. Even baby Klay Thompson, even Kevin Huerter wasn't good enough, and they had to go sign Bogdanovich and sign Gallinari, bring in all these different pieces, go get Rondo and then trade him for Lemon Pepper Lou. Like, they had to go get all these pieces and put them in positions to succeed to help Trae Young. And the Atlanta Hawks did it over and over and over. And ultimately it all came together this year because you got Capella for the first time because of the pandemic. You got Bogdanovich and Gallinari. That's 3 new starters plus John Collins, moved Kevin Huerter to the bench. DeAndre Hunter was in his second year before getting injured. Like, they just had so many different options where one night it might be Bogdanovich, one night it might be Gallinari. They're all in that like 50 to 100 range, where they can every now and then give you a nice little game. It's not going to happen every night. When your team has 2 or 3 of those guys, your team's going to be a 7 seed. But when you complement those 3, 4, 5 top 100 players with a superstar in Trae Young, then all of a sudden you've got something special. Might only be a second-round exit, because ultimately – across 40 years of NBA basketball, only 3 teams win without having a top 5 player, and most champions and elite teams have 2 of the top 5 players in the league. The Hawks have 0 all-stars on their team. Now, Trae Young is an all-star. He just got ridiculously snubbed from the game this year. But the Hawks, I mean, it can get you so far until at a moment's notice those stars have to say, I'm going to put you on my back and I'm going to start carrying you. At a certain point, that's when everyone's got to clear out and let Jokic go for 13 straight points, or let Anthony Davis go for 13 straight points, or let Giannis go for 13 straight points, because you just need a bucket. At a certain point, the Hawks will succumb to that because Trae Young is going to have an off night. Trae Young shot 34 times at a ridiculously high usage rate, but also assisted on 11 tries and had 24 points from John Collins. And I think Collins and Capella had like 4 or 5 alley-oop dunks in that game that helped out. Trae Young's production goes down and you kind of look around to someone else. I think that's when the Hawks will be exposed, because the 76ers exposed the Hawks. Even the Knicks in game 2 at the Garden, they exposed the Hawks because they outscored them by 20 points when Trae Young shot 3 for 15 from the field. Like, that's how the Hawks are going to ultimately get exposed. They've been exposed a few times, and it's why everyone's confused, like, hey, why are the Hawks still this good? Why are they 3 games away from the championship when we all kind of thought coming into the playoffs they were a first-round exit? Well, it's because they've been exposed. The 76ers didn't take advantage of it because Ben Simmons imploded and because they blew 26-point leads, and Tobias Harris can't be counted on all the time. He had 0 points in the second half of that Game 5 that totally imploded. So they couldn't take advantage of it. But I would be shocked if the Bucks don't, because all of this is just like it's the formula now for the Hawks. That's going to be their comeback. It's going to be their 1 in 2,000 chance of getting this point. And ultimately, I think they will be exposed, but it's still really fantastic to watch 51 to 100 players in the NBA, not all-stars, just starters in the NBA. Just there's 30 times 5 is 150, so there's 150 starters in the NBA. You've got tanking teams that put, like, terrible players in the, like Mo Harkless starting for the Phoenix Suns. I'm sorry, not the Phoenix Suns, the Sacramento Kings. Phoenix Suns are good now. Sacramento Kings start Mo Harkless. Like, there's about 100 starting caliber players in the NBA, and the Hawks probably have more of them in depth than anyone in the NBA. I know Milwaukee's only got 5 of them. I know Philadelphia's got 4 of them. You could go Embiid, Simmons, All-Stars, Tobias Harris, and Seth Curry. We know the Suns have 5 of them in Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Devin Booker, and Jay Crowder. But even Jay Crowder is questionable, but I'll throw Jay Crowder in there. They've got 5. The Utah Jazz had about 7. They were the deepest team in the league. They got a 1 seed for a reason. Who else would be on that list of like starting caliber players? Clippers have about 3 or 4, but they've got 2 superstars. Lakers had about 3 or 4, but they had 2 superstars. Miami had about 3 or 4. The Hawks have 6 of them that will ultimately at one point be exposed because they only have one of those shot-creating monsters in Trae Young, or all-stars, let's say. I mean, Trae Young's a superstar, but let's say they have 1 all-star, and the Milwaukee Bucks have 3. So ultimately, that will end up exposing the Atlanta Hawks, and I think the Bucks will win the series in either 5 or 6. If the Bucks had won the game yesterday, series over. Like, Bucks sweep, we're done with. Like, if the 48-point Trae Young game with that high a usage rate and the John Collins and Clint Capella success, if you lose that game, finito, series over. Like, you got no chance. Might be a 5-game series, but probably a sweep. If you don't win that one, finito. Like, Trae Young's not going to average 48 in the series. And you got a few of those Trae Young games. And this is the same thing LeBron did back in the 2018 finals. And I still point to this a lot in these cases. Remember the J.R. Smith game where J.R. Smith got the ball and ran out the clock? In that game, LeBron James had a 50-point triple-double. And LeBron James' strategy through that entire series is going to be, I can give you 4 of those games. 4 of those nuclear 50-point triple-doubles with ridiculously high usage rates. I could, at my very best, at LeBron James' very best, I can give you 4 of those games. And when they lost that first one, mindset. Nope, it's not enough. Can give you those. I can give you maybe 4 50-point games, 50-point triple-doubles. Still not going to be enough. And that's the situation that the Miami Heat were in last year in the playoffs, which was Jimmy Butler basically saying, I'm going to do that. I'm going to give you 40-point triple-doubles. I'm going to go nuclear 4 times, and that's our only hope of winning the series because we don't have Bam Adebayo and we don't have Goran Dragic. That's going to be how we go nuclear in the series, is me going for 40-point triple-doubles and carrying us over LeBron and Anthony Davis with ridiculously high usage rates and ridiculously high efficiency. And remember that Game 5 in the finals last year between the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers, where Jimmy Butler was, like, hunched over afterwards? That was a 45-point triple-double that will live in history even in defeat, because as great as Jimmy Butler is, Jimmy Butler is one of the 10 best players in the NBA. As great as Jimmy Butler is, stacked up against three of those go-to shot creators and two superstars, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and, well, I guess KCP was more of a spot-up guy, but KCP would be that person, or Kuzma, whatever you want to, whatever you think of Kuzma. Kuzma at least can create his own shot. That's one of the beauties of Kyle Kuzma. Like, he doesn't hit him efficiently enough, but at least he can create his own shot. With two superstars and Jimmy trying to do it with a bunch of backups, he could only give you two games. Like, as great as Jimmy Butler is, he could give you two games. Trae Young just gave you one of those games. And it with 81 points between Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday, 81 points between the three of them still wasn't enough. Until Chris Middleton misses a three-pointer at the end of the game to force overtime. The Hawks were down most of the game. They came back in the fourth quarter. The Bucks took a five-point lead in the fourth quarter, and the Hawks still ended up winning despite the ridiculously high usage rate of Trae Young. And that is going to be something difficult to replicate. But at the same time, the Hawks have the pieces and enough top – they have more top 100 players than the Milwaukee Bucks. When we talk about Bogdanovich, Gallinari, Clint Capella, John Collins, Trae Young, Herter. You could throw Herter in. He had a 27-point game the other night. Even Campaign had one of those for the Phoenix Suns in game two. Like, they've got about six of those guys. The Bucks have five, and they've got biscuits and gravy, because this is the joke I'm now running here. Pat Connaughton is biscuits. Bryn Forbes is gravy. You expect nothing from Bryn Forbes. It's not necessary, but just when you get that little gravy right on top, just feels nice. It's just a nice little addition. Anything Bryn Forbes gives you is gravy. And his partner in crime is biscuits, because biscuits go together with gravy. And Pat Connaughton is the same thing. You just expect that. You expect nothing. You expect 1-for-8 from Pat Connaughton and to airball a game-winning three-pointer in a one-point game with 25 seconds. But anything he gives you is gravy. So the Hawks have the same number of those top 100 players as the Milwaukee Bucks. But I feel like when push comes to shove, the fact that they've got three shot creators is going to make it near impossible for the Atlanta Hawks. And I think the Bucks are going to expose them in some of these games coming up here, like big time, like the 76ers did when they won game two, won game three in Atlanta, were up 18 points in game four, and up 26 points in game five. That's and dominated game six against the Atlanta Hawks, and we're up 12 in game seven. I think those are the points where Milwaukee's going to expose Atlanta. But if there was ever a game that Atlanta was going to do it, game one was that game. And for Jimmy Butler down 3-1 in the playoffs last year, game five was going to be that game to keep the series alive. And for LeBron James, 2018 with the Cavs, game one against the Warriors was going to be that game. They needed that performance. And LeBron ended up losing. Jimmy ended up winning. Trae Young ended up winning. Those are just the results that played out. We'll see whether the Hawks can replicate that, because they can't keep – it's not a sustainable model the way that they did that, with Trae Young shooting 34 shots and 48 points and 11 assists and scoring and assisting on 80 of your points. It's not a sustainable model for success. Because as great as Trae Young is, he's not Kevin Durant. He's not LeBron James. And that's not an indictment of Trae Young. Not even Jimmy Butler could do it four times in seven games. Like, only the greatest of the greats try, and not even LeBron could do it. It's a futile effort, but it's sometimes what you have to do, because you look around this team and say, we don't have any other all-stars. Who are the all-stars we can go to? It's just me. Of the top 25 players in the league, who can we look to right now? Nope, just me. It's all we got. Yeah, maybe we'll get a Bogdanovich game here, but do you really trust Bogdanovich all the time? No, of course not. Bogdanovich isn't a 25-point-a-game player. Gallinari's not a 25-point-a-game player. John Collins isn't even a 25-point-a-game player. The Bucks have three of those 25-a-game players. And then maybe they won't give it to you 25 every night, but they're not giving you less than 15. unless things really fall apart for Chris Middleton. And he went 0-for-9 in game one from three. So things could totally fall apart for Chris Middleton. They totally fell apart for Ben Simmons. They totally fell apart for Rudy Gobert. Like, it's possible. It's unlikely. But that's, like, your path to take advantage of it if you're the Atlanta Hawks is, one, we need to have a superstar for about 8 games, whether that be Gallinari, Bogdanovich, John Collins, who can give you 25 a night. John Collins gave you 24 in game one, but I don't think he can replicate it every single night. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's anything that, like, kind of reflects that John Collins has been that player throughout his career. And no disrespect to John Collins. Like, John Collins is a great second star on a team that's now in the conference finals and really was a final eight team. Like, being the second best player on a final eight team is a huge accomplishment. But career 16 a game, career, or this season 17 a game, in the playoffs averaging about 17 a game. So that's kind of where John Collins kind of sits, is around 17 a game. And the Bucks have 325 a game guys. So where are you going to find that extra production? You're going to find, if it's a simple math game of trying to find 12 points, are you going to get it from Trae Young averaging 48 a night instead of averaging 30 a night? Or if Trae Young averages 40 a game in the playoffs, are you going to get it from Gallinari? Are you going to get it from Bogdanovich? Or is it going to be a rotating cast of guys? Is it going to be one night Kevin Huerter, one night John Collins, one night a double-double from Clint Capella, one night a Gallinari's going to hit six threes? Because that strategy didn't work out for Utah. At a certain point, they just needed someone to kind of go nuclear, and it just didn't really work out that well. The Hawks got one of them. The Bucks got three. I think that's how they'll be exposed. It's, again, no disrespect to anyone. Trae Young's fantastic. Not even, it was a futile effort for LeBron James. LeBron James couldn't even do it with a lesser team. Kevin Durant couldn't do it with a lesser team. He did it in successfully. Games 5 and 7 of the last playoff series were unbelievably great. You know, by a toe, they end up losing in the second round. Like, it's a futile effort, but it's sometimes just the cast of characters that you have, because the Hawks only have one all-star on their team. The fantastic run for Warriors South, and winning game one against the 76ers was just like, we're good at this point. Everything else is a Bryn Forbes three-pointer. It's just gravy. Everything from this point forward is gravy for the Atlanta Hawks. They ended up winning a playoff series in the conference semifinals. Get to the conference finals. And now they've won game one against the Bucks. It's beyond anything I could have imagined this early for Warriors South. When I was talking about their success in 2019 and 2020, we did a whole ass podcast on Warriors South. I am on the Warriors South hype train, and we got Morgan from Australia on board. If you don't know, check out the Take It Easy podcast for that. And all of it, immense success for the Atlanta Hawks. Beyond anything I could have thought of at the start, it's been so, so crazy to see. And for Atlanta, you're probably going to get exposed at some point because the Sixers did the same thing to you, and the Bucks are an even more capable team than the Sixers. But, I mean, celebrate what you've done so far, because in the less than ideal circumstance of facing teams that all have multiple stars, and you only have one, with just the unideal circumstance of having less talent on your roster, at the top end of your roster, you're a deep team, but you don't have that top-heavy power. But that's your counterpunch. Your counterpunch is a Gallinari. Your counterpunch is a Bogdanovich. Your counterpunch is a John Collins. Your counterpunch is Lemon Pepper Lou. Your counterpunch is baby Klay Thompson and DeAndre Hunter, who's obviously not there anymore because he's out for the season. But that's your counterpunch to not having enough stars. And that's okay. That's okay. Atlanta's got that foundational core. They've got that Trae Young, that building block, that young 22-year-old superstar who's going to be the face of a generation. Your next goal, as it's been for a while, is to find that next star. When they become available, if they become available, find that next star player. That should be the ultimate goal for the Atlanta Hawks right now. And it might require dipping into some of that depth, but still find that next superstar or find that next all-star when they become available. Call up the Wizards. Call up the Wizards, see if they want to trade Bradley Beal. Because even if you make a deep run in the playoffs, which they've already done, doesn't mean it's going to replicate that success next year. Doesn't mean it's a sustainable model. The process now says that you – well, the process that they should be following now says you need to get another star. Maybe John Collins becomes that star. You re-sign John Collins either way, and he'll be the key piece whenever you trade for another star, whether that's Bradley Beal, whether it's maybe Ben Simmons, but I don't think they would trade Ben Simmons to the team that beat them. Maybe it's C.J. McCollum. Maybe it's what other stars are going to be available? Donovan Mitchell? I don't know. Find another all-star that's available. Might be an older all-star. I don't know. Maybe it's James Harden. Maybe it's Kyrie Irving. I don't know. Whenever one of them becomes available, go get him. Paul George. Paul George would be a great one. Go get Paul George. Compliment him with Trae Young. That would be awesome. But they would need Kawhi to leave first. Kawhi on the Hawks would be interesting. I mean, I know it's never going to happen, but Kawhi in free agency joins the Hawks. They sign and trade over like Gallinari. Then you can keep John Collins and put Kawhi, Trae Young, John Collins, Bogdanović, Kevin Huerter, Clint Capella. Oof, that would be a fun team. That would be a really fun team to watch. Maybe Kawhi would want to go to the Hawks. That would be a fun one. All right, we got about 20 minutes left here on the Take It Easy radio show. We ended up going deep into the Atlanta Hawks talk. So I mentioned Kawhi Leonard a second ago, so let's dip into some Kawhi Leonard thoughts here, because the Valley-oop for the Suns in Game 2, which is a fantastic name, DeAndre Ayton catching that lob to win Game 2, it was a fantastic finish, a fantastic, fantastic finish for the Atlanta for the Phoenix Suns. And the series is over. Like, if you lose the campaign game and you lose the game where Devin Booker only had, I think he was like 4 for 18 from the field to start the game, and finished with 20 points, but a shot below 30%. If you don't win the game where Devin Booker shoots below 30% and Chris Paul is coming back, series over. Clippers, no chance. No dice, no chance. So if this series is becoming over for the Clippers, and maybe Kawhi Leonard's going to come back, because look at the success they had when they ran into a Utah team where even without Kawhi Leonard, they exposed the Utah Jazz, which we all knew was going to happen. Then they did it, and we all laughed at them. But we also thought the Phoenix Suns would get exposed by a better team. The Suns have now run into Lakers without Anthony Davis, Nuggets without Jamal Murray, and Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. It's a nice little stretch to end up with on your road to the NBA Finals, where you'll get exposed by the Milwaukee Bucks. But it's been a fantastic run for the Suns. And for the Clippers, again, Kawhi Leonard's free agency seems like it's not going to be much of a free agency. It looks like he's going to go back to the Clippers, even though, as we've talked about before, there's not a lot of great basketball incentive for Kawhi Leonard to return to the Clippers. They've dunked about $42 million into Marcus Morris, Luke Kennard, and Patrick Beverley. Paul George is on a max contract. You're on a max contract. So there's not a lot of flexibility to work with. I don't think Kennard, Marcus Morris, or who did I say before, Beverley could really get you a lot. Maybe you could get into the Kyle Lowry sweepstakes, although Kyle Lowry fixes all the problems for the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, this is something I talked about, like, very easily. It's an easy fix for the Philadelphia 76ers. Sign Kyle Lowry. That's your answer to all your problems. Move Ben Simmons to the four, sign Kyle Lowry, go from there. And for the Los Angeles Clippers, there's not an easy fix anywhere on the roster. And that's the part where it's difficult for Kawhi Leonard. Maybe it's a lifestyle thing, but I think the Clippers are kind of staying in neutral while the Suns get better. The Lakers get better. The Jazz presumably get better. The Nuggets presumably get better. The Clippers kind of stay – the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas Mavericks almost beat the Clippers with Kawhi this year. Dallas Mavericks get better. And the Clippers kind of stay in neutral. Might even be in a tougher situation because now Kawhi's battling that ACL injury with knee tendonitis on his other knee, and it just creates this loop situation for the Clippers where you gave up everything to put this together. And a Kawhi Leonard free agent departure could blast you into the Stone Age. And Kawhi Leonard better negotiate that no-trade clause into his four-year contract that he has with the Clippers coming up. You better negotiate that no-trade clause in there. But the Clippers put all their eggs in this basket, this Kawhi Leonard 2020-2021 basket. They might get 2022, but it feels like the Clippers' winning window is closed. They've used most of their assets. They don't have any more draft picks. They don't have cap space, much like the Milwaukee Bucks. It's the same situation the Bucks find themselves in. The Bucks have used up their cap space. They've got three max contracts next year, $40 million for Jrue Holiday, $42 for Giannis, $38 for Chris Middleton. They've got limited future draft picks because they gave up a bunch for Jrue Holiday. Their only move left would be an all-in to upgrade from Chris Middleton or Jrue Holiday to another star, and those stars don't exactly grow on trees. And that's the same situation the Clippers find themselves in, is can you get a star better than Paul George? I don't think that that's the case right now. So it feels like the Clippers are going to stay in neutral, and maybe for next year, Kawhi Leonard gets back healthy. Maybe that's still good enough to compete in the Western Conference. But as soon as, say, the Nuggets reach their prime, and maybe the Nuggets are in their prime right now. Like, I don't know. Maybe the Nuggets are staying in neutral as well. Or the Lakers get fully healthy, or the Suns kick into their prime, which, again, might be right now. The Suns might surpass the Clippers right now, or the Dallas Mavericks improve. Whatever it may be, the Clippers are going to stay in neutral, which gives everyone else an opportunity to jump the Los Angeles Clippers. I don't know who it's going to be. There's still a lot that needs changing, but someone's going to end up jumping the Clippers, and that's the moment where we'll look up and say, the window's closed. Maybe it's not right now. Maybe they'll win Game 3 and keep the series alive, although they're not going to have Chris Paul, but the Suns are going to have – I'm sorry, they're not going to have Kawhi Leonard, but the Suns are going to get back Chris Paul. But at some point, they're going to stay in neutral. And maybe Kawhi Leonard leaves and just blows everything out. Maybe he goes to the Atlanta Hawks. But it also kind of feels like they're just kind of stuck in neutral. Not a lot of – no trade picks left. No cap flexibility. Inability to trade $41 million of contracts per season to Luke Kennard, Marcus Morris, and Patrick Beverley, all of which don't expire at the end of this year. Kennard's got four more years. Morris has three more years. Beverly has two more years. Not a lot to work with there. It's a difficult situation for the Clippers, and I don't know what the answer is from this point forward other than just stay in neutral and add a Serge Ibaka or add a Nick Batum or add a Terrence Mann or find another Terrence Mann on a rookie contract. Second-round pick that can give you 40 points in a playoff game by just screening on the Rudy Gobert over and over again and hitting 15 of 21 shots in a game six to break the Clipper curse. I'm grinning at that last part because the idea that he broke the Clipper curse is quite remarkable. Quite remarkable after 47 years of just, you know, the great rosters of all time couldn't break the Clipper curse. From Raja Bell to hitting a dagger to Donald Sterling to 3-1 leads against the Rockets. Nothing could break that old Clipper curse except for Terrence Mann and Rudy Gobert's inability to play defense. Kind of weird. And a crazy Paul George game five. Don't sleep on Paul George. Don't sleep on Paul George neither. And 25 points. Sorry, the only thing that broke the Clipper curse was beating a more cursed franchise in the Utah Jazz. That's the only thing that could break the Clipper curse. A decade of winning basketball. But the thing that did it was playing a cursed Utah Jazz franchise. Quite remarkable. I mentioned the Valley Oop in our description to today's show, so I feel like we should talk about the Valley Oop a little bit, because that was a ridiculous ending to the – just an absolutely ridiculous ending to the Phoenix Suns-Los Angeles Clippers series, because the Phoenix Suns, who looked like they were going to – again, like I said – Clippers had to win game two. They dropped game two. It's over. It was the Suns could put away the series right there. There's zero chance. There's zero chance that the Los Angeles Clippers come back in this series, assuming no Kawhi Leonard. Assuming Kawhi Leonard does not play the rest of the series, zero chance. Zero chance that the Los Angeles Clippers can come back in this series. And to have it end that way with, don't let Devin Booker beat us. We're not going to let Devin Booker beat us. 100%, no ifs, no ands, no buts. Devin Booker is not going to beat us. And to have Boogie Cousins blocking the wrong inbounder and to set a perfect screen on Zubac that he fought through, but then to just have gigantic Ayton get that step ahead, just a step ahead of Zubac, flush it on home, win the series, all that, or win the game, go up 2-0, get Chris Paul back, all that lovely jazz. Or I'm sorry, lovely Suns, because, you know, the Jazz are gone. But what was most fascinating for me about it was the way the Phoenix Suns played to the other team, played the matchup. This is something we talk about in football all the time. Football is a game where, you know, football, you play the other team. If the other team comes out in a base 3-4 defense or has a nickel coverage, you change the play at the line. You're always playing the other team. And if you're on defense and you know the team's lined up in a three-wide set with a slot receiver lined up next to the tight end, well, there's an ideal chance that either the slot receiver is going to fade out, so maybe you'll change into a zone coverage on your corners, or maybe they'll call a run play, and so you'll have a quarterback spy or a play-action play when you stack up two tight ends on one side. So, again, maybe you'll set up the linebacker to spy the quarterback. You play the other team in football quite a bit, and it happens sometimes in basketball, but it doesn't really happen as often. And what I found with the playoff basketball as a whole is fascinating in this way, because regular season basketball is just go out, run 48 minutes, and come back for the most part. Like, there's a lot of strategy involved, all that stuff, but a lot of it is just 48 minutes of randomness. The sample sizes are strange. The players might be strange, all that stuff. What's interesting about playoff series and the idea that you play the same team 6-7 times over again is that you can start to play the opponents a little bit more, and just creates for more interesting series, more interesting basketball, and games like Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, where Phoenix said, you're going to put Zubac on the floor, because Serge Ibaka is gone for the season. Their defensive big, gone for the season. If Zubac is going to be playing significant minutes, we're going to go DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, DeAndre Ayton. And then you're going to step on DeAndre Ayton, and you're going to make sure Devin Booker doesn't beat you. You're going to take away Devin Booker, and now you're going to focus on DeAndre Ayton. So who's going to take you apart? Campaign. Hey, little campaign, guy who was in the G League, guy who went to China in 2019, signed you coming out of the bubble, out of the NBA. Hey, campaign, they're going to leave you open. Can you score 13 baskets? If we give you, can you shoot 60%? Because they're just going to leave you open. They're going to take away Devin Booker. They're going to double DeAndre Ayton inside. Can you take over? Because they're just giving it to you. And what's really fascinating sometimes is when you play those matchups and they don't work out in your favor. For example, Utah Jazz. They said that we are going to deny Paul George, And we're going to leave Rudy Gobert out there because as long as Paul George is contained, we've got a chance because we are this strong offensive team. And you get up to a 25-point lead, and then Terrence Mann comes in. And Rudy Gobert keeps getting exposed. And then the shots stop falling, and everything starts collapsing in front of you. And it's so fascinating. Game case in point, the Valley-oop. We were just talking about it. DeMarcus Cousins guarding the three-point line in a one-point game with 0.9 seconds. Zubac leaning inside because he's going to draw out to the corner and double Devin Booker when he gets the ball coming off the screen. You play the opponent, and it goes against everything that you've thought in basketball. 0.9 seconds, one-point game, guard the rim. Guard the rim, guard the rim. Don't allow for an alley-oop. Guard the rim, guard the rim. There's only 0.9 seconds left. And what the Clippers did coming out is Devin Booker's not going to beat us. He's the guy. The ball's going to Devin Booker. He's not going to beat us. And so you've got DeMarcus Cousins blocking there. You've got, I think it was Morris maybe was guarding, maybe Paul George. Morris or Paul George was guarding the Devin Booker. And they set a back screen on Ayton to catch the ball at the rim. And Cousins couldn't even get in the way of the inbound from, I want to say it was Crowder inbounding the ball. You play to your opponent. You anticipate Booker's going to get that shot in the corner or shot on the wing, and he's going to try and win the game. Nope. Slip back door. Going to get a lob to Ayton. It's going to be an uncontested lob. No blocking by Cousins because he's protecting the three-point line because they have Devin Booker. Devin Booker gives them the best chance to win. Nope, because sometimes you get slapped in the face with a wet fish because DeAndre Ayton, 6'10", superhuman, 22-year-old who looks like a 78-year-old man, just his facial structure ever since he was at Arizona just looks like a 78-year-old man, catches a lob, and dunks it because he's 6'10 and a freak athlete. Number one pick in the draft, drafted over Luka Doncic. And a lot of people say, still defend it, knowing like, yeah, it was the wrong pick. But, I mean, this guy's pretty good over here. He's, you know, might be a top 50 player in the NBA at 22 years old. We're going to have to take away Booker and dare someone else to beat you. And the Suns are like, well, we're going to do this. You're going to put Zubac on him? You're going to put Zubac on Ayton and say we're going to take away Devin Booker? Oh, all right. We're good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy radio show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash and live on our YouTube channel. So thank you to everyone who stopped in on YouTube as well. We just reached 200 subscribers over there. So help us on our quest to 300 by hitting that subscribe button. And for those of you still hanging out here with us on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, follow our YouTube, follow our podcast, follow everything within the Take It Easy library. It is a huge thanks to everyone who supports us. And check out all of the other great shows here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Been a great week, ladies and gentlemen, and until next time, take it easy. Have a great day.